See, I am interviewing Mr. Alexander Scott. Lives at 2620 Hydraulic Road, and put this right there. Okay. First question. How long did you live in Vinegar Hill neighborhood?
I didn't live in the Vinegar Hill neighborhood.
You didn't?
No.
Okay, and where were you living at the time that this
I was living on Ridge Street.
Ridge Street?
675 Ridge Street.
Mm-hmm.
And I lived there for the first 4 years of my residency here in this city.
In Charlottesville?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. From about 59 to about 64, 65.
Mm-hmm. Right. Did you have any relatives that lived in Vinegar Hill at all? Nobody?
Nobody.
Related. Okay, did you own the home you were in on Ridge?
No, I rented the home.
Rented?
Yeah, for 4 years, first four or five years I was here, I rented this home.
Oh, okay. And you were married and
yes.
You had kids?
Yes, my children were grown when I moved here.
Okay.
At least the younger boy was in college,
mm-hmm.
and the older boy was out of college. So they were grown.
Mm-hmm. Okay, you said they went to college. What school did they go to?
Both of them went to Hampton Institute.
Hampton Institute. I got a couple of friends that were down there. It's a pretty good place. Did you have any official or unofficial role in dealing with the Vinegar Hill Project?
No.
None at all?
No.
Okay. So what I'm saying, did they have a vote for the people?
I don't know.
You don't know, okay.
It was in the process of being done and when I moved here in
59. Oh, I see.
So whatever happened, probably happened before I came to Charlottesville.
Oh, I see, okay. So you're saying they were already taking the place down?
Not taking it down.
Oh, they were in the
but
process
the
of...
decisions had been made, and arrangements that they had made they probably had gone on
right.
a year or two before then.
Right.
I think I was here probably 2 years before they actually put the bulldozers in and the hammers in.
Yeah. Okay. Let's see, ask you a question. Okay, so did you know anybody, not relatives, like friends or...
Oh, yes.
You knew people?
Yes.
Do you feel that they were adequately compensated for their property or their homes or...
My personal opinion is that whatever you had,
mm-hmm.
this type of urban, so-called urban renewal,
mm-hmm.
the owners are never adequately
mm-hmm.
compensated for the investment that they have made over the one or more lifetimes.
Right, right.
So if you ask me that, I would have to say no.
Mm-hmm.
They were paid according to arrangements that were made with them if they agreed to it, and if they didn't agree with it, you know, they went through the process of,
right.
of taking it by law
right.
and assessing the value on it.
Right. You don't actually know what they gave them?
No.
No. No. Okay. But,
I did hear some of the people who moved out complain that they didn't feel that they were adequately compensated.
Yeah. So I was talking to Mrs. Reeves, and she was saying that the renters didn't get a thing. They was just asking with her.
I don't know.
You know what I mean?
No.
Okay. Do you know anything about how much they were paying in rent over there?
No, I do not.
Were there any
the only thing I know is about the rent rate
right.
at that time for what they paid. I have no knowledge.
Right, right, right. Okay.
The person who can give you that would be Fleming.
Fleming?
Yeah. James Fleming.
James Fleming. James.
Yeah. Ideal Realty. It's not Golden Key Realty now.
Right.
He could give you valid information on this.
Okay.
He worked closely and he probably had charge of some of the properties. Right. So he could give you valid information on
right.
that.
Right. You have to give do you know if there was any other black neighborhoods around Shawfair area? Besides, there was Vinegar Hill, and then we heard something about there was a place called Cox Row or Star Hill. You know anything about that?
Yes, but not enough to be of valuable information for study.
Okay.
Some of the other fellows who've been here, who were born and reared here,
mm-hmm.
like Booker Reeves,
right.
like Ray Bell, and James Fleming.
Right.
Those people could give you very definite mm-hmm. information. Mm-hmm. I can't.
Right. Okay. They said, well, not they, but we studied some people, and they said that the hill, well, Vinegar Hill was like divided into sections, and one side was supposed to be the broken down side and, you know, the dirty side, and the other side was a good side, and where the homes were better, and, you know, building wise, and there was a path that divided it. Do you know anything about that?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Some of the older residents could give you that. I do know that some of the businesses right on Main Street
mm-hmm.
were black businesses.
Mm-hmm.
I recall a restaurant,
mm-hmm.
a barber shop, a general store.
Right. These are all black businesses?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
And just across the street, Masonic Hall, of historic value,
uh-huh.
and all of these were discarded.
Mm-hmm. The lady I asked before, she couldn't remember no black businesses at all.
Oh, yes.
I didn't read that.
No, I was here in 59,
mm-hmm.
and I'm very positive that they had a restaurant. Now, it was not a restaurant of the class of, say, a Holiday Inn.
Right.
But it served the clientele who probably couldn't pay
right.
the
yeah.
top prices.
Mm-hmm.
And it goes by different names, but you know the names because you know
right.
the language
right.
that people may use to describe that.
Right.
And they had a general store, and I think the general store was doing real good business, so far as I know. Mm-hmm. I used to go
this
there.
It's like on Main Street?
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
right on Main Street.
Right on Main Street.
And the barber shop was there, black barber shop was
mm-hmm.
there. These three businesses I know because I attended them.
Yeah, right, okay. How about the schools? Now they say Jefferson was the only black high school around, and then Burley was there, I think. But did the desegregation occur before you got, or after you got?
It was before and during the time and after.
Okay.
It was a long time process.
Right. So when you got here, they were in the process, or they were just beginning to get into it?
No, they had gone through
the
beginning pains,
uh-huh.
and they were in the midst of it.
Mm-hmm.
And they were dealing with what they call freedom of choice at this time. You see that history goes through four or five stages.
Mm-hmm.
You have the stage, the 54 decision,
right?
Which,
right.
You know about the 54 decision declaring separate.
But equal.
But equally legal.
Yeah, legal.
And the few children at first who decided to integrate, I think probably two or three,
right,
were taught in the superintendent's office and not in the
classroom.
Not in the classroom.
That's kind of bad.
And this is the first state.
Mm-hmm.
And rather than to open up the schools and carry this out in the beginning stages,
right,
there was a short period of time when students were taught in churches and in places where they had, that is the white school.
Right.
The black schools opened, whites didn't. Mm-hmm. And that was the beginning stage. And when I came here, they had gotten over that stage. And one or two black students had integrated into the white school system.
Mm-hmm.
There are a few. And they were dealing then with the freedom of choice,
right,
type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And later on, after I've been here, I'd say about 1965, I think there was actual integration started.
Yeah.
So from 54 to 65, so there was a process, a gradual process of integration going through several stages.
Okay. Well, did you see any existence of resistance or resentment from the whites or the blacks? Or was there any real racial problems as this was going on?
Well, it wasn't, not while I was principal of Burley. I was principal of Burley from 59 to 67. Because these were the last 7 or 8 years of its existence as
right,
a senior high school. And all of the black students in Charlottesville, Albemarle, and Green came to my school.
Green?
Yeah.
Green?
Yeah. However, if any student's desire to go to the other schools by his own freedom or his own choice,
right,
nobody stopped him, and he was free to do that.
Right.
However, we didn't have but very few students,
mm-hmm,
to do that. And as long as you had that extremely limited number of students, there were essentially no problems, because by and large, the students who chose were in the higher echelon of the academic potential. You didn't have trouble there. They fitted
right,
in
right,
just like the other students
right,
did.
Right.
Now, when they actually began to integrate completely, there were instances of frustration. I don't know how serious the problems were. I don't think they had problems of any serious nature.
Mm-hmm.
But there were frustrations.
Right.
There were conferences
right,
to work with teachers,
right,
to conferences to work with students, etc.
Mm-hmm.
All of
these were like just minor things.
I consider them minor,
yeah,
because the schools were never actually interrupted. However, I think in far too many instances, the transition
mm-hmm,
was not, how shall I put it, it was not as smooth
mm,
as it might have been if both sides had really and truly wanted it,
right,
and really and truly worked
for it. Yeah, I see what you mean. So it really wasn't a really great problem. You know, I knew it was going to be some.
No, I don't consider, by being in the school system, I don't consider that we had serious problems.
Oh, okay.
The city had one or two instances of, confrontation or something, like students marching or
right,
something. But to me, this was minor.
Right.
It was
something you probably expected.
Expected, yeah. A student getting rid of his frustration and trying to find his way into a new society.
Right.
I think the city had more, I think, than the county.
Mm-hmm.
But both divisions had, I think, very few problems.
Okay. Well, while we're on school, I think I'm going to keep on asking a few more questions about the school system since you were the,
principal at the senior high school for the last 7-8 years of its existence.
A girl? Because my sister and her brother, okay. She was there.
What year?
Let's see. I know she was there when y'all had that big winning football team. Let's see.
Well, we had a winning football team every year, so that doesn't tell us much. We didn't have many years when we didn't have.
Let's see. She's 30 now. So she had been back in, let's see.
This is 80.
80.
70.
70.
I was probably her principal. What was her name?
Leanne Jackson. She was a cheerleader.
Yeah.
She was a little thin, short girl.
Yeah.
Light skin.
Yeah.
She'll probably remember you if I tell her about you.
Yeah, I expect her.
Yeah.
This tells me two or three things. The students that I knew best were of two sorts. The leaders, the outstanding leaders who actually made strong contributions, and the hellraisers.
Oh,
the average student, the good citizen, who probably went for 4 or 5 years and never saw his face in the office. See, I would know.
Right.
I would know him because I didn't teach a class. I didn't come in direct contact with him. So, well, this happens, in schools.
Okay. Did you have this Burley was white and black, right?
Legally, in the latter stages, yes. Practically, no, because no white students ever attended Burley.
Okay, I see.
I did have the last 2 or 3 years, 4 or 5 white stack members.
Right.
But no white students.
Oh, I see.
One white student made an application to the practical nursing, LPN.
Mm-hmm.
But the committee didn't act favorably on his request to enter.
Oh, I see.
It was not because of race. They were perfectly right in denying his application. It wasn't race. If he had been of the sort that we wanted, that we could have helped, he would have been taken in.
Yeah, I see. So it wasn't a race.
No, no,
not at all.
No, no, no. Some of the black, in other words, we could not take in more than one out of every 4 applications anyway.
Right.
And we had fairly strict regulations in selecting the best, and the committee was an outstanding committee.
Mm-hmm.
That they would not be prejudiced against oppression.
Okay, I see.
But it wasn't raised, but he was denied. One application and he was denied. But if race was not a factor.
Right, okay. So Burley was predominantly black?
No, it was totally black, so far as the students were.
Okay, totally black, but did you know anything about Jefferson?
Yes.
Is that like predominantly black or?
No, it was totally black.
Totally black, too.
Yeah, but you were asked Booker Reed, he was a principal of Jefferson. While I was a principal of Curtis, so
really?
He can give you all of that information. But it was totally black.
Okay. So
until the latter stages, I think Jefferson probably, the last year or two, began to integrate their elementary schools in the city a bit more than we did in their high school.
Right.
But when I first came here for the first 5 or 6 years, it was totally fine.
All right. So Lane High School was the only white school here?
That's right. In the city.
In the city.
Right.
Okay. And then the school right here was Albemarle was?
Yeah, Albemarle was the high school for the county. Was one of the high schools. They also had a high school in Scottsdale at that time.
They did. Mm-hmm. Oh, but I know about that one.
Yeah, there was a high school at Scottsdale at that time.
Was it Scottsdale High School or was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
It was a small high school, mm-hmm. but they had elementary students there too, but they still had to carry on a high school program.
Okay. Let me ask you something about your students. What kind of jobs and further education do you think the students that got out tried to endure? I mean, like, there were most of them that got out went to find work, or did they want to further their education?
As I recall, right off the top part of my head, we had anywhere from 20% to 32% of the graduating students going to higher education. That's the first thing.
Mm-hmm.
Some years it was higher than others, mm-hmm. because some years you had better classes than others.
Right.
And as I remember the range, it ranged from around 20 to about 32 or 34%.
Right.
Our classes were very seldom less than 100 in the graduating class.
Right.
They went from probably 97 to probably 130, 135,
right.
as I recall.
Right.
And quite a number of the students that we trained did find employment in the community.
Mm-hmm.
For instance, we had a very good course in business at that time,
mm-hmm.
probably 8 and 9 and 10 units of instruction in business education. Consequently, a considerable number of those students went into the area of distribution.
Right.
Sales, girls.
Marketing.
Marketing, and stockroom clerks. Secretaries and semi-clerical duties and
right.
things of that sort.
Right.
You see, these doors at that time were opening up a bit wider, and we trained our students and placed them in the areas. As a matter of fact, right now, for the students who are 25, 28, 30, and 35 years, you go into any of these stores, banks, or distribution places, and I suspect 9 out of those persons in that age group are very students.
That's kind of true.
And we have an excellent class of LPNs. We turn out about anywhere from 8 to 12 LPNs a year. And they were always employed
right.
before they graduated.
So the courses were like just about college courses then?
Not college courses.
What's that? They were high schools now. They don't.
They were high school courses geared to providing skills that could be used in the field of employment following high school and following the person's or maturity age at 18,
right.
18 or 20.
I see.
And we had good course in masonry.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, the guys get into masonry and, you know, shop work.
Yeah. The masonry, we turned out some really good masons.
Mm-hmm.
And then, what else did we have? We had ICT.
Yeah, they got that today. I know my brothers are doing that.
And some of them were placed.
Mm-hmm.
So, all in all, we had a very good high school program, very comprehensive high school program. Okay. As a matter of fact, it was the best program, in my estimation, in the area.
Okay.
I can't say the state, but mm-hmm. I say in the area, and the area covers a pretty wide area, too.
Mm-hmm.
Because we offered some, I guess, some 5, 6, or 7 trades. And at that time, most of the other schools had academic training, and this was about all.
So Burley was it?
Yeah.
Okay. So when you got here, the school went 12 grades, right?
It had already gone to 12 grades before I came.
Oh, okay. We had some confrontation about the school only going to 8 grades, but I think that was like real early in the game.
Well, that was not at Burley.
Not at Burley?
No. When Burley opened up, it opened up as a senior high school in 51.
Right.
And the senior high school had been going on both at Jefferson and at the Alma Mater Training School for a number of years.
Mm-hmm.
So you have to go back before my time to the 8th grade. But as you say, way back there,
yeah,
they went to the 8th grade and that was all that. This is a part of the history of the area. That's true.
Mm-hmm.
But that was before my time.
Okay. Okay. Did you know much about the black leaders in Charlottesville? Were there any members on the committee that the City Hall committee or anybody you know of that had anything to do with it politically?
Well, if you ask me if I knew the black leaders,
the
question was yes. But now I have to answer it in terms of the black leaders that I knew and the black leaders that I worked with and communicated with.
Right.
First of all, I think your first group of black leaders before integration would certainly have to be the ministers
right,
of
okay.
your community.
Yeah, right.
Well, I knew practically all of them, worked with them, had very close relationship with them,
mm-hmm.
and positive, and I think good. So I knew them.
Mm-hmm.
I knew McCrary. And Bun and Mitchell at that time is gone now. Let's see who else. What other minister was he?
Was E.G. Hall here?
Hall was here when I first came.
Okay.
Hall came several years later.
Mm-hmm.
Hall came after McCrary either resigned or died. Resigned, I believe. From his church, and then Hall came into that church
mm-hmm.
Some years later.
Okay.
But I remember when he came. That is the ministerial group. I also knew and worked with very closely many of the parents or the students who had leadership roles and leadership potential, particularly in the PTA.
Uh-huh.
And I mentioned this because I always tried to sponsor and organize and push and
mm-hmm.
use
right.
the PTA.
Right.
And I remember I had very good leaders in the local, the school PTA,
mm-hmm.
both from the county and from the city. And some of the persons I remember now, Mitchell, who was the minister of the Episcopal Church, was one of the leaders. Forward, who is a reverend now from Esmont.
Mm-hmm.
I forget now where he's preaching now. He's not at Esmont now. Was one of the leaders. And three or four of the others that I don't recall
mm-hmm.
right
mm-hmm.
off the top of my head. But they were here and
yeah.
they did outstanding work,
mm-hmm.
and these were some of the school PTA leaders, all right? And then some of the other leaders that I recall were one of our first board members, and this was Ray Bell.
Right.
Ray Bell was one of our first board members. You see, our board here was a joint board of control,
mm-hmm.
made up of 3 members from Charlottesville board, 3 members from the city board, and
mm-hmm.
I remember Ray worked on that board because he was a school board member of the city of Charlottesville, and he was a leader. And then some of the other leaders that I could mention, and these are persons who were activists. And I mention this because my opinion is that a whole people, that is your community people, will need the philosophy of all of the leadership spectrum. Some people say, get the activists out and let us go ahead. But sometimes the activist becomes a catalyst. And I remember some two or three of the leaders then who actually became catalysts in pushing and promoting. And I think they provided a good service.
But what were some of the issues y'all were trying to get through?
Sometimes it's transportation. Now we didn't have a shortage of buses. Now were we discriminated against? Because we got our fair share of practically everything in while I was at Burley. But we had an outstanding person, assistant superintendent, whose name was Leslie Walton, and he saw to it that all of the schools were well provided for within what they gave him provide. So he was fair about it. I think no school ever got what it wanted. And some of the issues in snow. Snow too deep, you know, and this school got the snow moved off and that school didn't, and the activists was one of the issues that I recall. Salaries, city teachers are getting $500 more than we are, and we working right here in the city, and we don't get that. So teacher salary was an issue, as I recall.
Were y'all on a really strict budget as far as like athletic stuff?
Yes.
Did y'all have adequate athletic equipment? And
if you would ask a coach, he would tell you no. No coach or no athletic department will ever say that my department is adequate. However, for the athletic department, we were supposed to operate it on the funds that came in locally. That is the athletic department per se. In addition to the athletic department, your school curriculum carries out a good program of physical education from grades 8 to 12. It's mandated by the State Department. At least 3 years of it was mandated. Well, the school board generally provided some of the equipment and materials in the Department of Physical Education. Now, frankly, I cannot tell you which basketball they used when they started playing basketball, whether it belonged to the physical education department or whether the athletic department bought it. Nor was I particularly concerned, as long as they had the equipment. But we had both sources, and if you asked me if it was adequate, the answer, of course, would be yes and no. Depends on who judges.
I see. Okay.
Now, if it's comparable to other schools similarly situated, then I would have to say it was fairly adequate, yes.
Right.
But now, if you ask both of those coaches, any of the coaches I ever had, they'd tell you right away, no.
No. I know that's how it is at our school now, you know. They never have adequate equipment or whatever they want. You see? But
you have $1 million gate and still no.
Okay. I kind of ran out of questions. I'm going to ask you just one general question. This is my own question. In your opinion, how do you feel about a city or any other place, not just here in Charlottesville, how do you feel about them just telling people, I mean uprooting people and just telling them they have to go? And do you think the Vinegar Hill Project was a good idea or a bad idea for the black community?
I have mixed emotions about the whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's both good and bad.
Yeah,
now let me give you the good part about it. Any person or groups of persons who labor over a generation or generations and develop whatever they can develop by the sweat of their own brow.
Right.
May not be able to build castles. And more often than not, they are.
Mm-hmm.
But I have a feeling that whatever they build, and whatever they take care of, and whatever they own, is a plus side, is on the plus side for any person, or for any group of persons, or for any neighborhood. And that's good. And my opinion is that the statutes of your community should be very, very slow in eradicating and erasing that degree of self-sufficiency, that degree of earning, and that degree of success that the person or groups of persons have made.
Right.
That's my first reaction about it.
Right.
Now on the other side, when and if a community fails to maintain a certain type of responsibility and a certain type of duty and a certain type of upkeep, there is no other alternative except to have it removed by law in the interest of health and safety.
Right, right.
So it's both good and bad.
So really what you're saying is it's really brought on by yourself if you...
Not completely. There are many reasons for this. It's not necessarily brought on by self. That you have opportunity,
mm-hmm.
or the lack of opportunity.
Right.
You have training or the lack of training, all of which will affect a person's economic standing and stature.
Mm-hmm.
And you take some of those people who live in Vinegar Hill and worked on two jobs and three jobs at Franklin, low cost, many of them did the very best they could. And you can't say that person was shiftless.
Right, I see what you mean.
The economy, he's living in an economy that he just couldn't.
Right.
He couldn't work it out in that economy.
Right.
Because he had not kept up with the skills and whatnot. And 30 years ago or 40 years ago, about the only employment black people had was type of employment. employment which you could classify as domestic.
Right.
And domestic has always been poor.
Poor.
Particularly when it was done primarily by blacks, because we had a philosophy of patronage, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
People grew up, they had not completely liberated themselves from the employer-employee. That type of relationship.
Mm-hmm.
They had some of the leftovers from much early age,
mm-hmm.
even back to the slavery.
Right.
And all of these are factors.
Right, right. I see. So it was kind of like, well, I talked to some people and they just said the Benedict Hill that they knew was not that bad, but it was bad enough, and they would rather saw the city come in and try to fix it up than to, you know, just tear it all down completely.
Well, this is my opinion also, that it could have been salvaged.
Yeah, that's what most people say.
Or put it this way, let's say 85% of it could have been salvaged.
Mm-hmm. Okay, did you, you went around the neighborhood, was it really that bad? I mean, 15%, like you said, may have been really, really bad.
Well, I this is right off the top of my head. I have no study to prove that,
mm-hmm.
but I remember going in the neighborhood, visiting in the neighborhood. Some of the homes that I visited in were nice homes.
Mm-hmm.
By the standard of niceness at the time, were nice homes. The church, which was knocked down, was a nice church. And what else do I remember? And I remember some of the places
were pretty
dilapidated and unkempt and not well taken care of.
Right.
A few of them.
Right.
But I would think that a great deal of it could have been salvaged.
What do you think about the place they built for the other people to build, West Haven? And many say that was better than what they had, but it wasn't as good as they thought they were going to get.
The housing at West Haven, per se, I don't think there's anything wrong with it,
mm-hmm.
When it was built.
Yeah.
Nor has it been too badly kept. I think the people have kept it pretty well. I'm sure the long arm of the law has laid down some good strong advisory regulations to cause this.
Right.
But on the other hand, yes, when that place was built, the homes were nice.
Yeah.
They built very nice homes. They built well constructed and all.
Okay. All right.
However, I realize that this may have to be an intermediary step for people to be housed.
Mm-hmm.
But philosophically, my opinion is that every man and every family should own a certain portion of this soil, of this dirt,
right,
and of these homes. And I think this should be the aspiration of the family. But I realize that some intermediary step will have to be made, because many people cannot proceed to purchase.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And there may be a time when they will have to do what they are doing now, and this is to rent, and to rent, and if they have to rent, it's always best for them to live in decent homes.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But I don't look at this as the ultimate.
Right. Mm-hmm.
I think any family with enough get up and go, and with enough income to pay the rent that is charged in the city of Charlottesville, with proper knowledge of budgeting, can purchase his own home. If he chooses to do so. And philosophically, I would like to see and people to purchase their own home, because I think they have a great deal more interest in what is there.
Right, right. I see what you mean.
But I'm sure the intermediary step will have to be taken in practically every core city, because you have numbers of questions. Can't get that 10% down payment on veterans. They haven't saved $2,000 or $5,000. The economy is so that they probably can't. They might have 2 or 3 children. We know milk and butter has to come before homes.
Right.
So
mm-hmm.
I understand all of this, but philosophically, I would like to see, I'd like to think that any individual would aspire to ownership rather than to be a lifelong renter, unless he chooses to.
Yeah.
Now, some people choose to.
Right.
Now, if the person chooses to, that's just a different matter.
Right.
His philosophy would be different from mine.
Right.
I wouldn't choose.
I don't think I would either. I think one of these days, I hope I'll be able to buy.
You're able to live in Charlottesville, you're able to buy.
Also, it's like
you may have to work hard for the first 5 years and get the first down payment on.
Yeah.
Unless you're a veteran or have some other sources of income.
Mm-hmm. Well, I don't know what to do with it.